Hello, and welcome to the Dr. InfoSec Podcast, home of good cybersecurity conversations, hosted by Dr. Varun Khera of the ITSec Group and broadcasting globally from the ITSec headquarters in Singapore.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Dr. InfoSec Podcast. My name is Buell. I'll be your master of ceremonies for the duration, and with me is our host, Dr. InfoSec himself, Dr. Varun Khera. Dr. Khera, good afternoon. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon, everybody.
Our special guest for today is the ITSec Group's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Patrick Daneker. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Today, gentlemen, we're going to attempt what some would say is impossible. We're going to attempt to predict the future of cybersecurity. And that's a pretty tall order. Dr. Khera, how do you feel about predicting the future?
Pretty good. I mean, I feel that we could share our experience. We could maybe share the direction that we see the markets, the industry is heading into. And after all, it's a prediction. I mean, we are not 100% correct, but we believe that we see the direction of how the industry is moving forward.
Before we can predict the future, I think it's worth taking a look back at the past, right? Learn from our mistakes and learn from history. Let's take a look back at 2020, because I think being in cybersecurity, you become a little bit numbed to the countless incidents. But would you guys consider 2020 a benchmark year for incidents? It kind of feels like one, right?
Yeah, but you know, going back into history, because we would see that the trend keep increasing. So I wouldn't say it's a benchmark. I would say it's giving us where the industry is going. And as we know, the cyber risk keeps increasing. And why I say this is that as you move into 2021, I'm seeing in the market a lot of IoTs coming in, a lot of OTs operators coming in. And this is where I think that a lot of the trend will move into, a lot of the cyber attack will move in. So, you know, I wouldn't call it a benchmark here. I'd call it, a sample of what is to come.
Yes. Yeah, and I think it's also an exceptional year, right? With COVID forcing a lot of companies to redirect their employees to work from home or from different premises, or have people use their own hardware at home, which is maybe outside of the company's policies, etc. So I think it's a very special year, or it was a very special year. And we have seen, obviously, major attacks happening, and I think we'll go through them a little bit later. And I think it's good to see what happened, and also based on that, it's always a little easier then also to predict what's going to happen next, right? Because you see the trends, and we'll see it from our clients. What are they concerned about? What do they have to do next? What are the pressing issues? I think that's always a good learning curve to see what happened. What are the current issues still outstanding, and also see and learn from the clients, what are they doing next?
Exactly. I mean, we've chosen a snapshot here of notable incidents, but there were many, many more, right? We've chosen the headline ones. Let's take a closer look at them. This is the big one. This is December just gone by, and this was a hell of an attack. Russian nation-state espionage hackers. They managed to hack into SolarWinds. And SolarWinds are an interesting company. They build software that lets other big businesses, enterprises, manage their networks, their systems, and their infrastructure. So they're very much part of the global IT infrastructure stack. And these attackers, they poisoned a software update package with backdoor malware. So it meant when SolarWinds customers downloaded their update patches for their software, they were infiltrated. And it was all of their customers infiltrated. It was the Homeland Security, Treasury, Commerce, and Energy. And what the attackers were doing, they were picking and choosing. These guys had the luxury of being able to pick and choose their targets. Some organizations they infiltrated were untouched. Others were infiltrated, had their data exfiltrated. And we think this was an espionage attack. That's what the industry's saying. I don't know how they know that. But what do you guys think of this one? Hell of an attack, huh?
Yes,
I think it's basically again relying on others to be at the forefront and to be good is always difficult or also risky, because even SolarWinds is not a small and a small enterprise, and they have been everywhere, and you can see that from the attacks and who all reported attacks. So I think relying on others to be at the forefront and having a good system in place is not always the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, I know this is something we help our customers with. One in particular, I won't reveal their industry, but they're a vendor and they rely on a number of suppliers. And we do help our customers do what's called supply chain due diligence, right? Where we go in, because everyone knows supply chain is a cybersecurity risk. And we go in and we help ensure our customers' partners that their cybersecurity is up to scratch, that they're doing the fundamentals right. And that's something we help our customers with. But this is another level. I mean, helping a vendor with their suppliers who are, you know, shipping and exchanging physical products and maybe have access to each other's back end is one thing. But these guys, where they're building software that your business relies on, and the attackers are sophisticated enough to poison update packages, so you can't even trust the software, you know, the security patches coming through from your software vendor. I mean, I don't know how you'd struggle to defend against that. I mean, these are serious attackers, right?
Okay, Bulit, my view on this is this, right? I mean, supply chain attack is that the hacker wanted to get into SolarWinds so they could get into other supply, right? Other supply chain, and basically users who download SolarWinds product. But this is not the first time we're seeing these type of attacks, right? If you take back Stuxnet, it's actually pretty much one of the first cyber warfare, as they say on the news. And how they infected back then was they used USB, infect one by flash drive, physically infect something, and then it propagated to the whole Iran nuclear power plant, right? If you remember the news back then. So what I'm seeing is that a lot of these attacks today, I mean, the key point is sometimes, you know, even if it's SolarWinds case, even if they took good care of themselves, but other vendors may not, right? So if you think in reverse, my key point is supply chain is one area that we're going to see a lot more attack. Because like you rightly pointed out, you know, even if you're secured, you need to monitor who you're actually working with. And I have clients today who are using threat intelligence, and the threat intelligence actually give them a report of what threats are actually out there, right? And they can have like a map of all the threats. Think of it like a cyber threat radar. And from there, they can see if the supply chain or the partner that they're working with is on the list, they would then ask the partner to fix their infrastructure or fix their risk before they would come in and work with them. So that's where I see the trends will move into, because we're seeing a lot of these type of attacks coming in. This is rightly not the first, and it won't be the last, right?
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't a normal attack though, right? Do you think most businesses have, because these are really sophisticated attackers. They're probably sponsored by a nation state, meaning they're government spook hackers. This was clearly an espionage mission. You know, they're not looking to steal data and sell it or extort people. Is this something most of our customers have to worry about, do you think?
My view is yes. Maybe depending on the customer, right? Depending on the industry. I mean, sometimes when you want to do cyber espionage, I mean, you're not really targeting. You don't have to target the government, right? You could target industry that the government works with, and the government rightly works with a lot of the major IT infrastructure providers. So I see that a customer needs to be aware. Customer needs to be, you know, they need to know themselves well, and they need to know others well, right? Before they can work with the other party. So that's my view. You know, you could take back a lot of these type of attack. I mean, I mentioned Stuxnet. I mean, you put on SolarWinds. If you take back, I think 2013 or something, there was a target, one of the largest attacks that happened on target. I mean, as per the news, I mean, they were attacked by the HVAC, heat ventilation and air conditioning vendors. Attacker came in. If you remember, the attacker came in from the target was secured, right? To some extent they were secured, but their partner was not secured. So the attacker came in from the partner. And we know that they lost a significant, there was a significant data infiltrated. So that's just an example. So my take again, and repeating this, is that a customer or anybody who's in working in this field needs to be aware that this is where the trend's going to come in. If they cannot come into you, they come into your partners. And it might be a lot of the organizations are aware that themselves needs to be secured, but you know, this knowledge is not still not across the board. Not everybody is taking the same principle.
Yeah. So what's the takeaway here, guys? What's the key takeaway from this incident?
Okay, my takeaway is that, again, know yourself, know your partner.
Know your partner. That's my takeaway. Yeah, know your partners. It's not enough anymore, is it, to know you're safe? You have to make sure everyone else you're connected to is as well.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to have a certain basic risk awareness that you should not rely yourself too much on others. I think your house should be in order first.
Yes.
And foremost, I think that's the most important. And making sure that this doesn't happen is, I think, or happens again, is very difficult. Also what Warren said, but if your house is somewhat good in order and you have your systems in place to detect something like that at the early stage, I think that's key. That's key going forward, right?
Yeah. Have we seen any instances? Say, for example, you're a big company, right? And I'm one of your suppliers. And you realize as a large company that my cybersecurity isn't up to scratch. Have we seen instances in the real world where bigger companies are helping their suppliers bring their cybersecurity up to speed? Is that something we've seen out there in the wild?
Okay. My take is this, right? I mean, I don't, at least the way I operate, which is part of the APAC, I don't see bigger companies helping smaller companies at this point. But what I'm seeing is that bigger companies are saying, no, we won't work with you until you fix this. You
right.
See, and we see that in tenders, right? Like, for example, when a tender is released, they clearly state that you need to comply to certain things, otherwise we will not work with you. So that's
right.
An example of how bigger companies are forcing the smaller companies to work in,
right.
in a manner that they want.
That makes
but
sense.
I haven't seen them actually going down and saying, well, we will do the work for you or we will guide you. That's not there yet. But I think that's
right.
Why when vendors like us come in, right, to help.
And,
yeah,
and also
no, that
the
makes...
question, the question will be is how do you assess your supplier?
Yes.
You know? How good, how secure, how up to speed are they? So the assessment of this and the selection process of your supplier becomes very, very difficult, right? And in certain cases, you have to go to that specific supplier if you want or if you don't want, you know? So
yeah.
I think that becomes then not a part of selection process or make sure that your supplies are correct, but also then again to be proactive, you know, and to get your systems in place that if by any chance something happens, you get alerted pretty early, you know.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense, guys. The next one is interesting because I personally have never seen a psychiatrist or had major mental health issues, maybe a few minor ones if you ask my sisters. But this one's kind of scary because can you imagine, you know, at some point in your life, you go to a psychiatrist and you seek help for a problem you have in a mental health issue and you recover. But then a year or two later, hackers have hacked your data, your doctor's notes, your treatment data, and threatened to release that data online unless a ransomware is paid. I see this as an ugly extortion attempt. This is ugly, right? I mean, it's the hackers infiltrated a large national psychiatric group. They stole thousands of patients' data, tens of thousands of patients' data. They posted 300 juicy records, and by juicy, I mean full records of individuals with severe mental health issues, posted their records online and threatened to, you know, disclose the rest of the data unless you give them $500,000. This is an ugly one, right? Is this a trend we're going to see more of in the future?
I mean, this is basically a data leakage somehow, right? I mean, they hacked, they leaked the data. So I feel that this is something that we will see more as data is a new goal. So you would always want to attack the goal, right? Yeah. And my take is that, again, as you rightly pointed out, we will see more of this. You'll see more of data leakage. I'd like to, you know, maybe give an example. I mean, for example, I was working with a client and we found that a hacker leaked in the dark web access, you know, pretty much all the access about the Thai public, right, on the dark web. And they claimed that this came from an insurance company. So they leaked, they provided complete access, admin access into the insurance business, this particular insurance business. and you would basically gain admin control. You would have all the access to get data. And they were selling this for $2,000. You know, so you know, how we found this was very funny. We were doing a demo for a client, and we were doing a demo on the threat intelligence, and we found that this was actually leaked on the dark web. So you know, the key here, the key point is that dark web exists, and it's actually bigger than the web itself. It's maybe 5 times bigger than the web, right? So we don't know what's out there, but if you dig into the dark web, a lot of the data is out there. A lot of the leakage is already out there. You know, so if you look at most of these passwords, like I actually got alerted a few days back from one of the major vendors that I use for my personal computer that I'm logging into quite frequently, that my data is leaked. So we'll see this always, and this will continue because data is a new goal.
Yeah. It's also because data protection acts has been put in place. There will be penalties against companies who lose data. And obviously now what you also see is, I mean, whether it's now a psychiatrist or a small law firm or accounting firm, smaller ones with sensible data, whether it's merger and acquisition data, pre-IPO data, etc. And what would assume that not, or small asset management company for that matter of fact, also that because of their size, it's pretty much difficult for them to be up to speed on cybersecurity, right? So especially, I mean, if like 5, 6, 7, 8 good doctors set up a clinic together, I mean, cybersecurity is not their main concern at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And exactly. So, and now obviously this is very sensitive data, which is just not 100% secure. So obviously these are pretty simple, pretty easy targets for even hackers which have medium qualifications. And I think that will continue, and that you will see a lot more. And a lot of incidents are not even reported, you know. So what we see and what we read is maybe 5% of the real picture which there is out there. So I think that's also something to consider. So people think, oh, maybe 20, 30, 50, 100 things happened, but that's actually filtered down because nobody wants to admit something, right? Yeah. So the reality you don't see, and things like that will happen more and more, especially also maybe last year, a lot of people went independent, a lot of people set up new ventures, etc. So cybersecurity, unfortunately, is not at the forefront of these things. And that's where we then at some point can step in and help them, especially if you have very, very sensitive data, right? I think that's key, right?
Yeah. I mean, does it take a twisted mind? Because to me, if I was a psychiatrist and I was taking all these notes, I wouldn't think that this data had any value. I mean, it's not financial data. You'd need to be twisted to think about using this data as blackmail material, right? I mean, it takes a special kind of mind to figure out how to monetize this data in this way.
Yeah, but maybe one thing that that may happen here that we don't know is, you see, a lot. What I'm seeing again is that sometimes they're leaking out data because there's a lot of data privacy law that's coming into play. By leaking out the data, they probably want, you know, maybe that particular place to be fine, you know, for the news to sort of, you know, come out in a negative way towards that particular organization. So this is where maybe that's the motive, we don't know, right? I mean, I'm just twisting the way that they may be thinking.
Burying bad news on a good day, you're saying?
Mm, exactly.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting you should say that because they think this was an insider job. They've arrested a number of employees at the psychiatric group. So that's interesting you should say that, Varen. It is. Ulterior motives could be apparent. Interesting. Let's move on to the next one. Again, another healthcare. These attacks are despicable, but the reason they launch attacks on hospitals is because they know that hospitals have a duty of care, right, to their customers. Their patients, and they know that these hospitals will be desperate to get their systems back online. So in this case, it's you've got these hackers without any scruples, completely immoral behavior. And the reason we're talking about this specific incident, among all the hundreds, thousands of hospitals that have been attacked, is because this is the example that has directly led to the death of a patient. It's believed to be the first time a hospital attack has caused the death of a patient. This is nothing new to us, right? We've seen hospitals attacks in the real world again and again. What do you guys think about this one?
Okay, I'll start off. I feel that, again, you see attacks where they're leaking information, they're causing death, they're leaking of data. You will see attack on the IoTs, a lot of the IoT devices, maybe things that sort of, help pump blood, all these medical devices. So that's where you will see the market, the trend going into. And I'd like to sort of, and you see, I personally, I mean, from experience here working in this industry, last year we had a very interesting case that popped up, and it actually happened in Thailand. You know, in Thailand, the hacker was making a lot of noise, but they were probably not getting the right traction somehow. Based on the national policy of related to cybersecurity. I'm not sure, but what happened was that there's a hospital in the outskirts, right, called Saraburi Hospital. And the hacker actually compromised the database, leaked the data from the database, and sort of halted most of the hospital operational things. And they demanded 200,000 Bitcoin, which was worth about $2 billion. No hospital would pay $2 billion. But when we investigated, the motive of the hacker doing this in this case was about, getting known, getting themselves known, or getting attention into the cybersecurity, in the industry that the government needs to put in more investment. So because asking for $2 billion from a small hospital makes no sense. So there's a lot of different motive. And hackers attack anywhere, any target. That's what I feel. And that there's a lot of tools out there that automatically scans the network when they see there's anything vulnerable. They would flag it out, especially things that are untouched, and the attacker would come in and intrude these type of devices, right? So that's where we're seeing. And, so it's interesting case study. It's pointing out that, attackers attack everything. So, hospital needs to be aware of, but not just a hospital, every other sector needs to be aware of this. And you rightly pointed out in the beginning that cybersecurity is not only knowing you but knowing other people. So if they don't hack you directly, they come in from your supply chain.
Yeah,
that's my take.
And I think some of these attacks on hospitals could have been avoided if they would have patched known vulnerabilities in time.
Yes.
Right. So
yes.
So I think a lot of issues are. Nothing new coming up. It's because of unattended work or things carried out too late, So, and I think that's a lesson to take away from there. It's that you need to really be at the forefront, and if there are known vulnerabilities, you have to do something about it, and not just wait and hope it's not you that will be attacked or not attacked. So, I mean, there's no hope value in this. Really have to do the homework,
That's a good point. I mean, patching your updating your software is a fundamental thing. And this is something, I mean, we're a managed service provider, security service provider, right? So this is something we do for lots of our customers. It's bread and butter cybersecurity work. Make sure that your systems are properly patched. When your software vendor releases a security patch, make sure it's patched. And in this case, in this hospital attack, it was an unpatched vulnerability that let the hackers in. So it was the hospital not making sure that their software was up to date that caused this. And I think that's the tragedy in all of this. It maybe could have been prevented if they'd had a more robust updating system, So it's definitely a lesson to be learned there, I think. Now, another Bitcoin scam. It seems like there's a Bitcoin scam every 5 minutes, especially with Bitcoin soaring up to the $40,000 mark at the moment. But this was a notable attack. And the reason we mentioned this one is because it was a major Twitter hack. I don't really know how this will affect our customers, but it was notable. The attackers socially engineered a Twitter employee to get admin access. That means somebody called the employee up and conned them on the phone and talked them into going to a custom phishing website that they'd built. So the attackers built something that looked like the admin panel the employee was used to seeing, and had the employee enter their credentials and their two-factor authentication. And the result was they had control over pretty much any Twitter account. Elon Musk, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Bill Gates. And you think, given that power, there's a lot of mischief you could cause, right? But these guys didn't. They and maybe it's because it was a 17-year-old boy behind all of this. But these attackers, they began tweeting messages from all these accounts that instantly revealed, you know, who these attackers were. They were scammers. And they were tweeting messages that said, send me some Bitcoin and I'll send you triple back. You know, the basic, obvious scam to most people who were observing this. But they took in quite a few people. The 17-year-old took in $130,000, which is a lot of money for a 13-year-old. You know, a lot of money, Brian, for a 17-year-old. What do you think of this one? It's not really going to affect our customers, right, unless they're Twitter active?
Well, if you ask me, I mean, the motive of this attack was basically launching a social engineering, right? And we know that social engineering, the people factor is still the biggest blame, the biggest risk for a cybersecurity program. And this just, I mean, I wouldn't believe if, you know, I see an email from Bill Gates saying that, you know, transfer me the Bitcoin, I'll send you back. What it stress, what, I mean, regardless of how they got in, but what this thing stress, this scammer stress at this point is that, you know, people, education of people needs to be, you know, increased. People are still the weakest link in cybersecurity. That's what I feel, yeah. That's what the attack actually pointed out. And that's where we see as well in the industry, we see that, you know, some corporation has one of the best cybersecurity. They have zero trust infrastructure. They go all by the book, but in the end, you know, the people are always the weakest link. And that's what I see. Now, what I would like to sort of, you know, take us to think beyond this is what happens if these ransomware, these type of messages gets a little bit more advanced. You know, like we're seeing a lot of cyberbullying here today. The extortion, they're actually coming out and saying, well, you know, sort of either they give a social engineering message or they extort you. But what happens if they move into bullying you, like, you know, some type of message that sort of maybe that would have impacted a lot more people. I don't know. But that's where I see. I mean, I see a lot of these attack, you know, social engineering moving towards cyber psychology, you know, so cyber psychology. And then it's actually going into advanced psychology being applied into the cybersecurity program, cybersecurity, you know, attackers program that they're actually deploying today. That's what I feel. And, you know, I would like to again stress that people is still the weakest link, and running a proper education campaign is a must. We actually did a social engineering test on a lot of the places here, even banks, even TV operators. Wherever we go, we see that so people do click, people do give information. So the only way to address this is going by a proper training program, proper education program. And that's really lacking in the industry today.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a continuous, it has to be a continuous effort, you know, and not train them once. Also make sure that the training really stick to them, I think. So check and balances in training, I think, is also important. Really check and find out, are these people really adhering to the policies, right? Etc. Especially if you have 10,000 employees and employees are stressed and have lack of time and don't pay attention to everything, these things can happen. So a continuous training, a continuous monitoring, and emphasize on this, I think, is key, you know. And I think what Warren said is you can have the best infrastructure in place, but you need only one small mistake of one employee and you might be compromised already. So rather than building up more and more barriers, I think also neglect of informing, training, and monitoring your employee is key to a robust system and setup in companies.
Makes sense, yeah. But be honest with me, guys. If Barack Obama said, give me $100 and I'll give you $300 back, would you give him $100?
Of course not.
If Elon Musk said it, I'd definitely give him $100. If I thought it was Elon Musk, I mean, why wouldn't you? So you can kind of see why this scam works on some people.
But the message is, what's too good to be true is never true.
Yeah. I guess the key takeaway out there is Barack Obama's never going to offer you Bitcoin, guys. You know. So hacktivists, we don't hear about hacktivists a lot. And then suddenly they burst into the limelight with something new. In this case, the hacktivist group wasn't the famous one we're all familiar with, Anonymous. It was a group called DDoS, Distributed Denial of Secrets, DDoS Secrets Hacktivist Group, and quite a serious leak. They dumped an enormous amount of law enforcement and US intelligence data. Biggest hack of US law enforcement agents in history. And interestingly, included their plans to track and identify Antifa. So politically sensitive communications there as well. They weren't after any money. They were just after, these are ideologists. These are ideologues, right?
Yeah, and you will have more and more of splitter groups or new groups or other activists with different motives, you know. I mean, it's obviously, we mostly read about cybersecurity threats and attacks where money is involved or money is the game of the attackers or the aim. But there's a lot of activists going around, right, which try to make their point or harm others by various means. And I think that's also not to, one should not underestimate these groups, right? Some are more known than others, but they're building up day by day. There will be new ones coming to the market, and some of them are fully funded. I mean, some of them got their first extortion bitcoins 10 years ago, and with Bitcoin at 40,000, it's an easy calculation, you know? Yeah. So they must be fully funded these days, you know?
Yeah. Well-financed hacktivists who just want to back you because they think you're doing bad things. I mean, I guess the only way to... Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Sorry, my take is, you know, I think Patrick touched on the right point. A lot of these activists are growing. Why they're growing is, if you ask me, is that because it's really not hard to attack a computer network. I saw a graph that was published by Carnegie Mellon. It shows where in the 1980s, if you were a hacker, your knowledge had to be at the top. But, you know, the graph actually ran until the year 2000, early 2000. And at the early year 2000, you don't really need to know much to be able to attack a network, a computer system, right? You basically get the right tools because there's a lot of these tools out there. And there's all these Linux distribution, there's all these kits that's out there that you just need to go around and play with. And that's what is creating access for this ideology, this group of people. Like, again, we had a case, we actually worked on a similar situation here where in Thailand, activists actually hacked into the Thai prison, and they released the photo of the prison. I don't know if we would call it hack, but the rumors was it that the password of the prison, the routers that was used to access the prison, the password was password. So you see, either people are really not aware. I mean, don't quote me here. This is what the news came out, but the point here is that sometimes people are really not, you know, they're really not doing the right thing. The weakest link on how they select certain criteria, how password is actually a problem. But again, the point is that these attackers don't need to know much. I mean, these hacktivists, they go after a tool, they learn to use a tool, and the tool will probably have discovered the link to that password, right? And would have actually tried to brute force the password and probably got in a few seconds. So everything is actually coming back to having easy access to the tool. And the key point is the internet is not controllable and anybody can go after any type of information. And that's why these hacktivist numbers would increase. A lot of ideology would increase, and they would work towards creating their own ideology.
Yeah. You know, they don't really know where all of this data came from. They know it came from law enforcement fusion centers. And these fusion centers are interesting. I've had dealings with one of them before. They're responsible for sharing intelligence amongst different federal law enforcement agencies and departments. So they're holding a lot of different kind of data. You know, they're holding comms, they're holding intelligence files on Antifa in this case. How they were infiltrated, we don't really know. This is a little bit murky, the how, the attribution. We know who did it because they claim responsibility, but nobody's really said how they've managed to get hold of this data. We just know it came from a whole bunch of these different fusion centers, which is why there's so much data. So it looks like these hacktivists had access to a lot of LEO, you know, fusion centers, which is kind of worrying in itself. I mean, if hacktivists can get access to that, foreign espionage can as well, you'd have to assume. But yeah, this was interesting. It's called Blue Leaks, they called it, because of, you know, police being blue.
But then my point here is that, you know, is data stored encrypted? You know, all these things, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, that's, again, you know.
That's a good question.
Exactly. How is the data stored? Maybe they have no encryption at all.
Well, I think we know the answer. It wasn't. it definitely wasn't encrypted. Because if it was, they wouldn't have been able to leak it, right? They just had all this encrypted file. But no. I mean, look, we can assume law enforcement weren't following best practice when it comes to encrypting, you know, sensitive data. And U.S. intelligence documents at rest, which is worrying. Worrying. I mean, you know, we have law enforcement customers and government customers. So it's just a reminder that even those who are very, very used to security protocols and processes can sometimes slip up and not quite secure data that's under their control, you know? Could happen to any organization that is lax.
I'd like to point one thing here. Sorry again to cut you. There's a bit of a delay in the voice. What we see is this, right? You know, when you talk about data, we actually working on, because there's a lot, all these GDPRs, all these data privacy law that's coming in place. And a lot of the times organization, and I believe maybe the law enforcement agencies that's leaked the data, probably don't know where the data is being stored, right? Because they may have encrypted the data at some place. So what we do is that we do a data flow. We have to go in, look at how the data is flowing, where it's flowing into. And a lot of the times when we work with clients, we see that data is all over the place. They don't even know because they built a system over the years, so they've accumulated this over the years. And they could, in some customer, we see data being stored at 5 different places, right, for example. But I think this is where the problem lies in. Maybe they're trying to follow the best practices, but the best practices is not being, practiced everywhere because they don't really know where the data is. I'm giving that example from what we see.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? That does make sense. Yeah, knowing where your data is and what state it's in is essential. Yeah, that makes sense. So rather than these guys just being bungling, they were just sprawling and had too much data stashed in different places. Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. And bring us on to our final event of 2020. This one takes up the whole first half of the year, pretty much. We called it this COVID cyber storm. Because I think it was an event unparalleled in the history of cybersecurity, and it created this perfect cyberstorm, a combination of millions of employees being sent to work from home and cyber criminals simultaneously exploiting, you know, COVID scared a lot of people. There's lots of fear, uncertainty, and instability caused by COVID. And the cyber criminals were exploiting this. They threw up tens of thousands of fake, you know, malicious or scammy COVID websites springing up. They tripled down on their email phishing attacks. Those rose by 600%. And these were malicious emails targeting scared people worried about COVID or desperate people, you know, worried about the bailout money. So these were a phenomenal amount of attacks against people who are likely to click on the emails, right? And I think all of this together created this perfect storm. The employees at home were a problem. You know, suddenly you've got businesses used to having thousands of staff, and we've got plenty of customers who are like this, who used to having thousands of staff in their offices, suddenly tell them to go home and work from home, but not have the infrastructure in place, you know, to give these people laptops so they can securely work from home. So these employees were going home. They're working from their local machines connected to their local networks. Who knows if they're secure or not? Nobody really does. Can we rely on the average person to secure their personal computer? Probably not. And against this backdrop, you've got cyber criminals doubling down on their efforts to get people to click on scammy emails and visit fake malicious websites. And it was a huge problem. It created a phenomenal amount of cyber attacks. I know we at ITSEC have been crazy busy from March onwards, helping businesses, helping our customers. I think do the fundamentals when it comes to remote workers. You know, settling up, securing remote workers isn't rocket science. It's making sure their machines are patched. It's making sure their AV and firewalls are properly set up. You know, the basic stuff. But we've been crazy busy because it's so many of these remote workers at once. You know, you've suddenly got hundreds of people you have to, thousands of users you have to secure. So it's created a problem. What do you guys think of this one? This was the incident of the year, right, really?
Yes, and you know, we actually help our customer because we had a VPN security product, if you remember. So it's actually at the right time.
Yes.
But you know, you again, as you pointed out, I mean, getting people to work from home, and I see, for example, I can share personal experience here. My kid is actually given an iPad. Okay, my daughter is given an iPad to work from home, and to study from home, and she was actually home for at least 6 months for the lockdown. And the school never had an infrastructure, so everybody was doing based on Google Classroom, and we saw a lot of the things like cyberbullying, you know, happening. Kids going, you know, kids getting completely hooked onto the computers. Now this is an example of things when you have to do things in a rush. I mean, and the school actually had to push through things. But what we see was that you know, once this happened, the cybersecurity market exploded, right? Because you know, people were working from homes, students were still, you know, studying from home. And instead of having just a few targets, I mean, okay, again, having huge target, the target amplified. So we see a lot of that. Now, my recommendation here is that, you know, VPN is a must, right? You need to have secure VPN when you're logged in. Also, you can read up on this. Gartner has a term called SASE. Very interesting. It's called Secure Access Service Edge. You know, actually, it was one of the key keyword term that they pointed in August 2019 as a future of the cloud computing, which actually took place. A lot of the implementation of SASE took place about in 2020 based on the COVID. So a lot of the organization was completely lost on what they were going to do with this enormous amount of people working from home. And a lot of the organization moved towards SASE. A lot of the organization implemented, you know, because you could not put your own VPNs. You maybe go into secure access service edge, and you're basically sort of getting you know, VPN check and connecting into your organization. So any of our participant can read up on SASE. But then what I feel again is that you know, this trend. I just read a Gartner report today, and it's very interesting. It says that now 82% of companies are allowing their employees to work from home, even without the COVID. Right. For example, we visited a bank here. You know, you could not go in anymore and ask for a meeting because people hardly would come to work. And that's where we will see the industry going forward. So people are going to work from home. The threats are going to amplify. You know, my take on this is you need to really look into secure service edge. You need to look into how you get that edge people connected into your infrastructure, right? And because we are hearing more and more news on what's happening, right, with this threat amplifying.
Yes.
So that's my take.
Well, I know,
yeah, and I think what Warren rightfully mentioned, and I think that's something really to focus on, is that at some point when the world has defeated COVID, so to say, is that companies and people have gotten used to work from home, right? Which means not everybody will go back to their offices. So they will have a stack of people still working home after this pandemic. And working from home, as we see, carries different risks, right? Because it's not on-premise, it's off-premise, right? And it's also, at some point, for certain companies, it's cheaper that the people work from home, cutting down on commuting time, cutting down on things, other things. So that trend has only started, and that won't stop. But the companies, even 6 months or 9 months or 12 months into a pandemic, still can't cover with the risks of their people working from home, you know? So yes. I think that's a big, big thing, not only for ITSEC, but for a lot of cybersecurity companies, to really help and educate the client that really focus has to be on this. And the trend only has started, you know?
Yes. Yes. Cyberstorm indeed, gentlemen. Hell of a time. Now, we're coming to the interesting part of our webinar today. Predictions for 2021. We're going to attempt to predict the future, gentlemen. And at this point, I'd like to insert a legal disclaimer. We're not legally liable for any bad predictions to the audience out there. So, Varian, you can't be sued for predicting crazy stuff. Comforting. So moving on to the first prediction. We've just spoken about this and we've just touched on this, but it's a trend. It's a trend we can all see clearly. Remote workers are going to be targeted throughout the rest of the year. You just said it, Patrick. There's still a lot of companies out there that haven't quite caught up with the securing, you know, their home workers. More attacks are going to occur on home computers and networks with bad actors taking advantage of unpatched systems. This is coming back to the fundamentals. This is remote workers at home who haven't patched their operating systems properly, haven't installed the latest Windows 10 updates, haven't, you know, downloaded the latest definitions of their antiviruses. They're low-hanging fruit, but throughout the rest of the year, they're going to be attacked. So the key takeaway is focus on securing your remote workers. I think we've spoken at length on this subject. Do you guys have any points to add to this one?
I think also what you see is a lot of companies have been caught off guard. A lot of companies were allowing their employees to use their own devices from home, their own iPads or laptops, etc., with not even antivirus installed on it, etc., to access confidential company data. You know, accessing the emails from home, etc., etc. So, yeah, lesson learned from that. It's for a lot of companies very, very difficult to start somewhere. And because it is difficult to start somewhere, they will give up before they even started. You know, I think that's always what we see. And I think that's something where education towards our customers and new potential customers and others is very important. That even if it looks complicated, don't give up and start to put into best practices in place, right?
Yes. Yes, that makes sense. Oops, sorry.
What I see is that, the work from home trend, I mean, Patrick again pointed out a nice point here. He pointed out that, you know, people are being sent home without an antivirus. Now, that's right. I mean, you see people working from home, you see that their infrastructure was never prepared for this, and a lot of the organization. Mm-hmm. But then what we are seeing in even organization that is prepared for this is that the trend has actually moved. Maybe antivirus alone is not enough anymore in some of these advanced network. I'm actually referring to a trend that we call XDR, extended detection and response. And I see that's going to happen moving forward. Organization needs to look into this, because you put an antivirus, it works based on signature. Now, how do you take on, you know, cyber psychology types of threat? For example, you know, a malware attempting to do cyber bully, a malware attempting to cyber extort you, or malware that's actually 0 day, that's actually not released from the patch. So the market is, again, we see the trend that a lot of these are going to come in place. A lot of the XDRs, you can move away from the antivirus. A lot of the organizations today don't even have antivirus, but the market's already moving away from it. Now, that's what I see. So work from home is going to amplify this adoption. Then I think the password, as you mentioned, password is going to go away. A lot of two factors authentication is going to come in. And patching, I think, I'm just sort of listing on what I see as a trend. Patching is going to be a big issue. I mean, you're not going to be able to...
You're getting ahead of us, Varian. Just trying to get my head around what you were just saying about XDR. So what you're saying is, right, when it comes to securing remote workers, rather than just doing the basics, making sure they're patched and, you know, the virus is updated, we're going beyond and treating them as part of our network and actively hunting for threats across the remote workers' machines. Advanced detection and response across that endpoint estate, right?
Yes, on the work from home, that's what I see. We're moving towards them being an extended, them being part of the infrastructure, extended part of the infrastructure. We're moving towards, moving from the actually being a managed services to managed detection and response provider. So we're going to see the cybersecurity market move. We're going to see the work from home trend create a new type of environment in the market. And that's the XDR and also the managed services moving to in line to sort of, with this work from home trend, becoming an MDR provider.
Interesting. That makes sense. It does make perfect sense. So moving on to our next prediction here, you touched on this briefly, and thank God, at long last, passwords begin to go away. Now, haven't we been saying this every year for the last 10? You just touched on this, Farian. What do you think about this subject of passwordless authentication?
Yep. First of all, I apologize. I actually assumed that you wanted me to talk about all the trend that I see. So if we go by step, I mean, password. What I see with password is this is something we've been talking about for a long time, right? I mean, two-factor authentication is going to be a key, and we're seeing that it's not a necessity; it's actually mandatory now. You go to Google, you go to all these cloud provider for emails, and you're seeing that they're offering two-factor authentication. We see two-factor. I think password will you cannot rely on password anymore. You're going to have to go two-factor, and eventually everything's going to be biometric. Who you are, what you are. Who you are, what you are. We're going to move towards what you are in the future. But for this particular 2021, it's going to move towards, two-factor authentication. So what you have, what you know.
Understood. That's an interesting future there. I must admit, I work in cybersecurity. I understand password security. I have a password manager, but I'm still guilty. I'll admit it. I'm still guilty of using the same password in different places sometimes. And that's me, a cybersecurity between commas professional, right? So God knows what real people are doing out there. Normal people with their passwords, they're probably using the same password everywhere. In fact, we know they are. So this hasn't come a moment too soon. What do you think, Patrick? Are you sick of passwords?
Yeah, so I think it's a common annoying and a nuisance for many, many people. And what I think what Warren said is two-factor authentication will be the first step, but we're moving in baby steps away from passwords. It could have been done, as you said, 5 years ago, etc. Technology is in place. Using the technology is still always lacking behind, even if there is forced two-factor authentication for Gmails, etc., etc. But companies don't use it on their own on sensitive data, for example. Yeah. So making sure that actually what is there in the market being used would have been already a big step forward.
Yeah. I mean, this is a huge problem, right? I think it's something like 80% of hacking breaches can be attributed to stolen, reused, or weak passwords. So this is obviously a massive pain point that needs to be solved. And you said something really interesting, Varun. It's moving to what you are. What does that mean? Is that biometrics, or what does that mean exactly?
Yes, biometric. And we're seeing this apparent if you do transactions at the bank, eKYC, right? They allow you to take photos of your face and then they verify it. So everything is moving towards who you are. And that is where the market in baby step is going. Today you can go into your office with a fingerprint scan, right? But you probably cannot, you're not so much doing logging into your network with a fingerprint scan. There's a lot of people, even though that's possible, a lot of people are still using password. But in baby steps, password will be completely gone. That's my take.
Interesting. I mean, hey, we all use FaceTime, right, to log into our phones. I've not heard anyone have a problem with that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. Good riddance, I say. I'm glad they're going away. Our final prediction, our penultimate prediction, ransomware is going to get worse. Now, some would say this is an easy one because we know it's going to get worse, but the reason it's going to get worse, it's becoming more sophisticated. New twists. They're stealing data before they encrypt it so they can extort people who refuse to pay. And they're packaging up malware, different kinds of malware with this ransomware. And they're specifically targeting organizations now, these criminal organized gangs. They're choosing their targets clearly. What do you guys think about the ransomware wave we're all kind of suffering from?
Yeah, I think we touched on that a little bit earlier also. I think fundamentally important to understand is that these hackers these days are fully funded. Whoever did extortion, this, that, got paid in Bitcoins years ago. And if they have not sold their Bitcoins, they're multimillionaires or whatever it is by now. And obviously, fully funded bad guys can do a lot more than semi-funded bad guys, right? So I think that will just lead us in the future to see more and more attacks, because if liquidity is available, it's just easier to go bigger scale and to do more and more. And then it's even more rewarding. So it's like a vicious circle, right? Fully funded, do more, get more, do more, get more. And that's like a vicious circle, which it's pretty difficult to break it.
Yeah, it's become a cliche. The ransomware operator driving a Lamborghini, right? It's getting bad out there. They're moving away from the spray and pray approach to big game hunting, where they specifically target businesses. But what's scary is this whole industry that sprung up around ransomware. Ransomware as a service. So let's say I want a ransomware variant. I don't need to be able to build ransomware. I go and see a crime gang. They lend me their ransomware in return for a small piece of the takings, right? And then I email Varian this ransomware, and he has to pay me money. And boom, I'm in the ransomware game. It's really easy to get into this game now if you're a criminal. And that's what's scary, ransomware as a service. The enabling of technically unskilled, you know, miscreants to send malware to anybody, to send ransomware to anybody. It's made it much easier for these people. What do you think, Varian? I'm not going to ransomware you, Varian, by the way. That was a joke.
You know, I don't want to ransomware name, Varian. That's what I think. Okay, look, you have to take back to ransomware, right? I mean, earlier ransomware, maybe Trojans, viruses, was just predicting password, logging in, and then moving forward, right? Then I don't know if you know about the Zeus ransomware. I mean, then they came up with ransomware, and they were allowing people to download variation of the ransomware. Basically, each variation was different. So you could take the Zeus ransomware, which has a lot of variation. You could download it, fuzz it, do a fuzzing, make it look a little bit different on the coding, on the header, and then you could use it as a new ransomware. So that's what they were doing. But at some point, these, as I mentioned earlier, right, these antivirus was getting smarter, and especially today where we're moving to XDR, you know, it's getting even more smarter, even without signature. They were detecting all these things. So today, I think the market is, the industry is going, the cyber criminal industry is going where you pointed out. You know, they're offering rents, so you don't need to think about the ransomware. I will build the ransomware for you. I'll give it to you as a service. You just use the service, and then you go and target, you know, places that you want to target. So, you know, ransomware is not going in away soon, and it's going to get smarter and smarter, because as organizations, you know, large organizations move into XDR, they've moved past antiviruses, they've moved into, you know, using machine learning to detect for threat, you will see ransomware evolving, you know. And I mentioned many times here in this call that one of the evolution of the ransomware would be cyber psychology, ransomware applying psychology. And that's not something we see today yet, but that could be potentially where ransomware is heading, right? You know, it could blackmail you. It could be like a person. It's actually extorting you and blackmailing you in the process. And because, you know, the thing is, Bulay, here, as the detection gets smarter, the threat has to avert the detection. So it gets smarter and smarter. It's a game of the cat and mouse. And this thing keeps evolving, keeps going.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen a trend where they're stealing the data before they encrypt it and extort you. Sorry, and ransom you so that they can extort you. It gives them an added edge, you know, them having possession of your data as well as it all being encrypted on your local machines. But it also creates just a huge amount of risk. I mean, even if you pay the ransom in these cases, they've still got your data. You have to rely on the word of criminals that they're going to delete your data once you paid your ransom. And it just, you know, in the old days where you were infected by ransomware. Let's say you either cleaned it up, recovered and restored from backups, or you paid the ransom. You could be fairly sure that was all over with, you know, but in this new world, these criminals, they've got your data as well. They've taken the data before they've encrypted it. And that's kind of worrying.
Exactly.
And that's worrying there. Now, our final prediction, because we're coming up to the end of our time here, gentlemen. And it seems that we keep coming back to fundamentals because businesses aren't doing what they should be out there. Patching is more important than ever. What do you guys think about this one? Why aren't people doing the basics?
Okay, I'll start then. So, you know, maybe talk about how vulnerabilities are discovered, right? I mean, so what happens is vulnerability is discovered. Then that vulnerability is disclosed to the vendor. Then the vendor works on a fix. Then the fix is released, right? So you basically the patch is actually trying to solve the vulnerability that was discovered. Maybe from the vulnerability discovered to a patch being released could take months, could take, you know, depending on the severity of the vulnerabilities and the vendor, it could take weeks to months, right? Days to months, let's put it this way. Now, you know, so if you don't patch your vulnerabilities, you're exposed. And a lot of the virus, like if you look, take back to WannaCry, right? I mean, it was actually exploiting vulnerabilities that had a patch. So the attacker was actually reverse engineering the patch, right? And then building malware based on the patch, right? So you have to patch. It's the fundamental of cybersecurity, right? You have a system, you know, you have a system that's working. I know that a lot of IT people don't want to touch it if it's working, especially Linux system. I was a Linux administrator. If it's working, no, just leave it alone. Don't do anything with it. But that's not the way to go. I mean, we need to patch. We need to make sure that our systems are actually correctly patched. All the vulnerabilities are closed because we've gone through a lot in this call, right? A lot of these tools will automatically discover the vulnerabilities, will automatically discover which machine is running all applications, right? And then it will alert the attacker or the hacker. So that's how it works. So that is a point one. And you know, maybe Bule here, a lot of the organizations are aware of this. They're doing patching to some extent. But another point I'd like to point out here is that what about OT system? You know, you have your OT system. You know, maybe you're take an example of your even you know your home routers. How often is that patch? How often do you come in and look at your password on those routers? You know, so you have to not just look at the IT, but also focus on the OT, right? And that's where I see IT in most of the market, people are aware they need to patch. I'm not going to go into the push that, you know, I think the market is aware, but what about the OT? You know, hardly anybody touches on the OT right now. So that's where I would like the industry to look into. Okay. That's my two cents here. Patrick, maybe you can share something.
Yeah, I think it's we're going back to the basics. A lot of known vulnerability are always used, right? And fixing known vulnerabilities in the system, that's already a big leap step forward, right? Because what you also said, Warren, is that don't touch something which is working. So the neglect of it is actually then producing avenues of attack, right? So and whether it's home routers or so many more items coming into place and into consideration, that it's a must to do it, but people are hesitant, and because they become hesitant or are hesitant, that's the avenue of attack of most attacks, right? So and I think there are some statistics. I think 80% of attacks are carried out on known vulnerabilities. So, yeah, neglect will be basically get over the neglect. I think that's the key takeaway here, you know, and yeah, really doing it on a day to day basis, or month to month, or week to week basis.
Yeah.
It's a must. There's no way around it anymore, you know.
Yeah, you can't be lazy anymore. You can't leave that patching until next month. It's got to be done now.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
And that brings us to the end of our podcast today. We've just been running for just over an hour now. Patrick.
Varun, thank you so much for your time today. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody, for attending. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Kerem, absolute pleasure as always.
Thank you, and everybody, have a good weekend ahead.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. All the best.
You've been listening to the Dr. InfoSec podcast with Dr. Varun Kara and guests. If you have any cybersecurity questions or need some help with anything cybersecurity related, get in touch with the doctor and his team at ITSec by emailing info@itsec.group. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode of Dr. InfoSec.